Contented Media presents Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, an original podcast series with Mark Hunter and Arthur Van Pelt.
Hello and welcome to Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. My name is Mark Hunter, author and co-presenter of the podcast, and in this special bonus episode, exclusively for our supporters, I speak to Rory Kathleen Jones, one of the three journalists invited to the 2016 signing sessions, where Craig Wright thoroughly failed to prove his candidacy as Satoshi Nakamoto. Rory and I relived that strange episode and its fallout, and looked at how the events of 2016 shaped what has transpired since. A word on the audio, Rory and I were talking in his front room in less than optimal conditions, so please excuse the odd bump and rustle here and there. I hope you enjoy the interview. Rory, thank you so much for spending this time with me to go through your ride on the Craig Wright crazy train, going back to 2016. It's been a long time since then. Is this something you've thought about much since you finished with it, or is it something you've forgotten about mostly?
Well, I forget about it from time to time, but Craig Wright is still out there making a lot of noise, so I can't help noticing it. And I also can't help noticing that he owes me some money and he's not paid it back.
Yes, we'll come to that. We'll come to that very soon. So for those that don't know, because I think there's maybe a different generation of Bitcoiners coming in the last few years that maybe have heard of Craig Wright. They know about the lawsuits that are going on now, but they maybe don't know about what happened all those years ago. Can you tell me how you got mixed up in this, basically?
Well, I was the BBC's technology correspondent. I had been covering technology for quite a long time. I'd been officially the technology correspondent from 2007 onwards. Covering, you know, huge stories like the arrival of the iPhone, the advance of Facebook, artificial intelligence, and so on. And I had taken an interest in the cryptocurrency scene, which was purely about Bitcoin back then, and done a few stories on it. I'd bought a pizza for the Radio 4 PM program for half a Bitcoin, which of course everybody laughs at and says you wasted all that money on a pizza, not understanding really that is a kind of demolition of the case for crypto anyway, if you can't spend it without worrying that it'll be worth more in a few years' time. And I had I'd been moderately interested in it. It was a marginal story, it was for mainstream audiences, but it was beginning to take off to some extent. And then in the spring of 2016, I got approached by quite an unlikely source, a public relations agency that usually specialised not in technology, but in the music industry. It was promoted various bands and so on. And this guy came to me and said, "We have got the man who is Satoshi Nakamoto." And I vaguely knew about Satoshi Nakamoto, and I vaguely knew that there was some story running around right then about somebody claiming to be him. So I obviously said I was interested, and the idea was that the BBC, The Economist magazine, very respectable outlet, and GQ, slightly left field but does some really interesting stuff, we three organisations would be given this as an exclusive. And it moved on from there.
How was it sold to you? Was it like a big reveal? Like was it literally, this is the man, we're going to present him to you and here he is?
Yeah, the idea was we were going to get to meet him. He was going to give us some proof that he was who he said he was. It would all be embargoed for a particular day. Turned out to be the May Day bank holiday, I think. And we'd get to meet him, we would get to film him, and we'd have a lovely scoop. So we didn't go into this sort of naively. We went into it thinking this could be a great story or it could be a load of nonsense. I don't know if you remember, but somebody else had been outed as Satoshi Nakamoto. I think he was actually called Mr. Nakamoto.
Dorian Nakamoto.
Dorian Nakamoto, yeah. In the United States, and had fiercely denied it and seemed not to be. And then there were rumours, there was a story going around about some Australian guy called Craig Wright. So there was something in the air. And obviously, Bitcoin was beginning to sort of enter the public consciousness more. It's still, you know, relatively marginal, but it was a wonderful mystery. This anonymous person who'd created this revolutionary new idea that could change the world. Even then, I was a bit sceptical about whether it really was going to change the world. But it was obviously, if it was true, a great story and an intriguing one.
So how much did you know about Bitcoin in terms of how he was going to prove it to you? Did you know anything about the method he was going to use to prove it to you? Did they explain to you up front how he was going to do it?
Well, you've got to be aware that the people we were dealing with knew less about Bitcoin than I did. You know, some guy who used to represent big bands on major tours and generally showbiz, frankly. It was a bizarre choice of agency to use. So it was a bit of Chinese whispers. They explained that something was going to happen, but they couldn't quite explain what. And we were invited to go along to a briefing session without the camera, where A, we would find out who this person was, and B, we would have this demo, which was going to be the proof that he was who he said he was. And then that would be followed by an on-camera meeting where we would do a bit of the same.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it all came about. So obviously you arranged dates, and I believe it was in Tottenham Court Road or somewhere?
It was the offices of this PR agency.
Right.
On the Tottenham Court Road. We arrived, there are a number of rooms there. GQ and The Economist probably had appointments either the same day or the day after. And I went there with my producer and a colleague who knew a little bit more about cryptocurrency than I did from the BBC website. And we were shown into this room, and lo and behold, there was Dr. Craig Wright.
What was your first impression of him?
He seemed kind of nerdy. He was suited and booted. He was rather sort of smartly dressed in a way that you kind of don't expect from the tech world. He talked and he talked and he talked, and we didn't understand a lot of what he said. But also there was a man called John Matonis, who we were introduced to from the Bitcoin Foundation. And that was quite important to us because he was introduced and seemed to have the credentials as part of, if there can be an establishment, the Bitcoin establishment. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a very technical subject. I cover technology, but I cover everything from social media and the row over, you know, standards online and abuse online, to new phones, to artificial intelligence. I was not then, and am not now, I know a bit more about it now, a huge expert in cryptocurrency. So it was quite important to us that there was somebody there who was, and we were then told that there was going to be a proof. And we sat down with this guy, Craig Wright. He was slightly eccentric the first time we met him and very eccentric the second time we met him. And he and his colleagues around the table explained that we were going to see this signing process whereby he used the electronic signature that could only be that of Satoshi Nakamoto. And again, I'll be frank with you, we did not understand that. We didn't understand the process which was taking place. We had it explained to us. I always think the most difficult thing to explain in the world is quantum computing, which you almost take on trust. You start wandering down this path, and you get halfway down the path and you think you understand it, and then you realize you don't. So I was honest. I said, you're showing me something that you say could only be done by Satoshi Nakamoto. This gentleman here, John Matonis, says it stands up. They also had Gavin Andreessen, not there, but had been there previously, who had seen the demonstration and was obviously a great expert in this area and a big figure. And he had vouched for the fact that it was genuine. So we, without that level of expertise, relied on them, really, as our guarantors.
So you saw him sign this message on this wallet, on this screen,
yeah.
All on his laptop?
Yes. Yes, all on his machine.
We now know that that was probably how he faked the whole thing for all these various people.
Yeah.
It's only been done on one non-Craig Wright-owned laptop for Gavin Andresen, but yeah. He had access to it for a good couple of hours before.
Yes, they bought a kind of naked machine, yes. They said.
And then gave it to him to do what he wanted to.
Yeah,
it. Because you had two sessions with him, right? You had one session for the signing, and did you interview him on that first day as well?
We didn't interview him formally because we didn't have the camera there. So, I was a television reporter and a radio reporter. And yes, we were doing stuff for the website too. But it was only when we recorded it that it was going to be there and a story.
So the signing was never filmed?
To be honest, it was never going to be the kind of television that would make it to air in a 2-minute news piece. It was going to be impossible to get a kind of shot that would say anything meaningful. It was like some extremely, to be honest, inarticulate engineer trying to explain some process without really explaining it.
So John Matonis did the translating for you in a way?
Yeah. I listened back the other day. There is some audio of John Matonis actually explaining what had happened.
This morning, Craig is able to demonstrate for you personally the signing on blocks 1 through 9. I personally witnessed myself the signing on block 1 and block 9. And this is not going to involve a monetary transfer. It's going to involve a signing of a message, which will be verified by the public key. So Craig will sign it with the private key. And it will be verified by the corresponding public key. You'll be able to write down the public key that verifies the message, because you'll be able to then go back to the block and see that it's the same public key that's associated with that mining reward.
Mm.
Okay. Is that clear?
Yeah. Are we clear on that?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now we know after he signed for you, he then went to do the Economist and the GQ pieces, where he got really riled up by the cryptologist that asked him all these questions.
He got very angry with that. Was it GQ's cryptologist?
It was GQ's. It was Nicolas Courtois, the French guy. Yeah, he really didn't like him because he asked him some difficult questions he had no answers for. So then the next day, you come in for your on-camera interview and you find him in a different mood altogether.
Yeah, we turned up and it was ridiculous. You know, we had been given this huge build-up that we were going to get this story, and obviously the culmination of the story, the delivery of the story, was dependent on us actually filming him and him frankly saying, "I am Satoshi Nakamoto." The kind of proof was always going to be, you know, up there for examination by the Bitcoin world. In terms of a story, a man saying he was coming out and claiming to be was the top line. So that was what was important. And we got there and there was a strange atmosphere, and the PR folks were scurrying back and forth looking extremely anxious in that way when you turn up and something's gone wrong and they're trying to pretend that everything's absolutely fine. And then for a while it seemed that the interview wasn't going to happen. He was obviously in a mood of some kind. They were trying to pacify him. And eventually we were allowed into the room, me and my cameraman and my producer. And he was obviously in a very bad mood. And we wanted to make it look good. If you're a TV professional, you and the cameraman and the producer want the shot to look good. And we didn't really like the room. He was backed up against a wall, so no depth to it. He was kind of trapped behind his computer in a sort of defensive posture. But when we suggested he move, he said, "Absolutely not, I'm not going anywhere." And then worse, he said he would only ask him one question. I'm trying to remember what the question was, but it was a ridiculously restrictive question. And there was toing and froing and toing and froing, and I was getting incredibly exasperated. And then eventually we started, and of course, you know, once you start asking questions, you continue asking questions. But his whole demeanour was, I've been trapped into this. I didn't want to do this. Let's get it over and get you out of here. I don't really want to talk to you. But he did answer the crucial question, are you Satoshi Nakamoto? But in a slightly strange way.
So you're going to show me that Satoshi Nakamoto is you?
Yes. Some people will believe, some people won't. And to tell you the truth, I don't really care.
But you can say, hand on heart to me, I am Satoshi Nakamoto.
I was the main part of it. Other people helped me.
Did that take you aback?
It did. It did. I thought, just a minute, we've been sold this guy. You know, there's been this huge build-up. He's shown us what he says is proof. Come on, deliver. And I kind of slightly bought his line, which was that he was incredibly stressed. I didn't quite know why he was so stressed. Although, you know, there are obvious reasons emerged later. It was obvious to me then that there were people around him. There was a sort of infrastructure there which he was not very comfortable with. So it seemed that, you know, he was under pressure to deliver this. And he was going to do it if he absolutely had to, but then he was going to get out as soon as he could. We got some shots, you know, of him at his computer. I think we then did an interview separately in another room with John Matonis. But yeah, we left not on particularly good terms, but thinking at least, well, we've got the key line. He does say he is Satoshi Nakamoto. And then we had to go and work out, you know, how to process this, because we still had a big story, but I was coming around to the fact that we'd have to be reasonably cautious and say, this man is claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto rather than he definitely is.
So you had no way of critiquing it?
No, we were given a USB stick to take away afterwards. And we took it home, looked at it, thought, frankly, well, I don't know what's going on. And as I say, took it on trust that what Gavin Andreessen and John Matonis had said, that it was genuine, was true.
We're going to actually give you a signed message, but you're going to take away. The details of that I'll be writing up. And I'm doing it in a convoluted, difficult way for what you're taking away, which is a PEM-encoded file, because everyone says, I have no idea about these things. So I'm extracting a ECC key into a PEM key in OpenSSL that can be used as a normal PEM public key for importing into CAs and SSL and all the rest, that I will then verify that way, and I'll with the blog entry will be writing up everything about it. I'll be signing a hash of a message, which I'll show you this morning, the message and the results in the hash. And I'll be allowing you to take that.
We didn't know quite what to do with it. We plugged it into a laptop and had a look at it and were none the wiser.
So they didn't tell you how to go ahead and prove it yourself?
No. There was sort of Chinese whispers with him telling, I presume telling them and them telling me, but it was not at all clear.
Did you know that he came out about 6 months ago, I think, and said that he intentionally gave you a bunch of nonsense on those keys?
I've heard that, yes, which made me laugh. I mean, what is going on? You have told journalists that you are Satoshi Nakamoto and that you're going to prove it, and then you're messing them about. What is that about?
And you also wouldn't have been aware. I mean, and you knew you were dealing with PR people. You could tell there was something, he had forces pushing him into this. But you wouldn't have been aware that he signed a contract about a year before that that bailed him out of the mess, the financial mess his companies were in, gave him something at $250,000 if he was publicly outed as Satoshi by 31st of December 2016. So he was coming to you with this financial pressure that if he did it, he got a massive payday and he got bailed out from his tax issues with the ATO. If you'd have known that up front, how would that have changed your thought process?
Well, to be honest, that would have meant that in the BBC's term, it wasn't a story. Man you've never heard of, claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto, but you know, it turns out all to be nonsense. It wasn't a big enough story that if it didn't stack up at all, it'd even be worth going there. As an example, about 6 months later, some other guy contacted me at the BBC and said, I am Satoshi Nakamoto. Came in, we had a meeting. He was obviously insane. We said, thank you very much, and off he went again.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I think we might have treated it like that.
Okay. So you went off and you wrote up the story.
Just to put it in perspective, it was not as a big enough story that, you know, it was probably going to make it to the 10 o'clock news. I don't think it did make it to the 10 o'clock news. But we put it out on the Today programme in radio form, and we put a TV piece out on Breakfast TV, which probably ran a bit later on as well. So we were all geared up for that and excited about that. It was a bank holiday, so, you know, it's reasonably quiet apart from that. But very quickly, it began to be torn apart.
One of the biggest unanswered questions surrounding Bitcoin is who invented it. Many claimed the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto, inventor of the virtual currency, only to have their claims dismissed. Now, Australian businessman Craig Wright says he is the inventor of Bitcoin, and his claim has some support, but that is depending on who you ask.
There is a tremendous amount of skepticism about whether or not Craig Wright really is Satoshi.
Speaking of skepticism, Peter Todd, a Bitcoin developer, says if this was real, Mr. Wright would have signed a message with the private key from the first Bitcoin block mined. Anything else smells like a scam.
Right.
And of course, it happened on the very day that there was a big Bitcoin conference going on in New York. And as soon as New York woke up, people at that conference began to dismantle Craig Wright's proof. People who, unlike me, and unlike 99.9% of the population, understood this process which had been demonstrated, said, it's fake. So obviously that was a problem for us. Gavin Andreessen was at this conference and was being pursued around it by journalists and looking ever more anxious. And he'd said it was, he was still saying it was genuine. So we were in a difficult position.
I do think Craig is Satoshi. I met with him in London. He fits the kind of person that I was interacting with way back in 2010. And he provided some cryptographic proof using the private key from the very first Bitcoin block to show that he possessed that key. So although it's impossible to prove something like that 100%, I think for me, he's proved it beyond a reasonable doubt.
Did you go back and change the original story? Because that's what the likes of, I think, The Economist did, and certainly Wired and Gizmodo did when they revealed him, so to speak, in 2015. They amended their original pieces and said, oh, caveat, by the way, we now don't think he's Satoshi.
A colleague was writing the web piece. So the way that works, that would have been updated with the reaction. And I was writing some blogs and immediately starting writing, you know, blogs about the reaction and about the doubts that were creeping in. My memory is that it wasn't such a huge story that it was, you know, on the rolling news channel or whatever, but there were pieces running where that note of doubt was creeping in. And then that accelerated over the next few days.
Yeah, so you move on from this suggestion that things aren't quite what they seem. When did the PR company get back in touch with you, and what did they say?
Well, there were a number of calls. My memory is that, first of all, he put out a statement, Craig Wright. He was comparing himself to the French writer Jean-Paul Sartre, which is kind of weird. And I studied French at university and knew a bit about Sartre, which made me think, this guy is slightly going off the edge here. But he came back, or his PR people came back, promising what they called extraordinary proof to convince the doubters. And we reported that he was going to produce this extraordinary proof. My memory is I got into discussions with them about one way of proving this. And I can't remember who suggested this, whether it was I suggested it or that they suggested it. And we eventually agreed that one way to do this would be for me, John Matonis and Gavin Andreessen to send a tiny amount of Bitcoin to this address of a block known to be controlled by Satoshi, a very early block, I think sometimes referred to as the Genesis block, and that he would then send that money back. So we agreed that, and that looks, that'll go both, you know, a good way of proving it and actually quite dramatic. We thought, this is fun. So I sent my money, which was 0.01701 Bitcoin, to this address. So that back then, that would have been worth about a fiver. And we positioned a camera in front of the web page where you could follow what was happening on the block and kept refreshing and looking for the arrow pointing the other direction, showing the money had come back. Mm-hmm. And we waited and we waited and we got more and more patient.
How long did you wait for?
I waited, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours. And we gave up. Then we got a phone call. Well, first of all, we got a call saying this wasn't going to happen, that there'd been some sort of snafu and have to wait for tomorrow. And then the next day, it all went very badly wrong. First of all, he published this new blog post and wiped out all of his previous blog posts, basically saying, I cannot do this. I thought I could, but I can't. That indicating that the pressure had all got too much for him. And then we got this mysterious and very worrying phone call saying he had tried to harm himself. Now this, for obvious reasons, put the BBC in a difficult situation. It put our managers, who were very, you know, keen on our responsibilities for the mental health of people we get involved with, and they were very worried about this and hauled me in, and we basically decided to step away from the story. I wrote one more piece, not mentioning this phone call, but just what had happened in terms of the experiment and how that had failed. And we stepped away from the story and kind of wrote it off as to experience as a bit embarrassing, but there you go.
Well, the suggestion is that he faked that to get out of the coin sending.
Yeah,
which, you know, we can't, we're not in a position really to say yes or no, but that would not be a surprise. I take it you've never seen that money again. That money's still in one of Satoshi's wallets.
Yeah. And every time I see the continued campaign by Dr. Craig Wright to assert that he is Satoshi Nakamoto and threaten death and destruction on anybody who claims he isn't, I have a wry smile and think, well, it's perfectly simple, Craig. You just send me the money back. And, you know, at various stages, that £5 has grown to something like 200.
Is that what, do you know what it's worth now?
I'll have a look in a moment.
Okay.
But it has grown quite a lot over the years.
Was there at any point when it came to moving the coins, a conversation about the Bitcoin being held in a trust?
No. If that had been the case, why would we have sat there with our camera in front of the screen, having been told that this money was coming back? Nothing was said about that at all.
Looking back then, it would be very easy to ask you if you think Craig Wright is Satoshi or not, but I won't do that. I think I know the answer. But what's your overall impression of him from the time you spent as part of that whole charade?
I deal with a lot of, you know, quite highly strung and some of them not very good at communicating technology folks over the years. I thought, you know, at first that's all he was, a guy who was a bit shy, a bit wrapped up in so deep in what he was doing that he couldn't really explain it to people. Certainly over the process of those few days, my view of him darkened. He was obviously a very difficult character. And frankly, what happened though over those few days also kind of put the iron in my soul about the whole cryptocurrency scene. because everywhere I turned, then and since, it's been home to the most extraordinary collection of grifters, fantasists, and frankly crooks that you can possibly imagine. So I think that was a formative experience.
I mean, I'm not sure how much attention you've paid in the intervening years. I imagine you sort of lost interest for a few years and then maybe come back to it as he's gained more headlines. But from what you saw back then, are you at all surprised about what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years?
What I'm surprised by is his sheer persistence and the persistence of his backers in peddling this vision of the world. I mean, I've always said, you know, the cryptocurrency world is barking mad, and it's the people's front of Bitcoin versus the Bitcoin's people front versus the Bitcoin Liberation Army. And I've got impatient with it and frankly bored with it. But I did get fascinated actually listening to your podcast series in the psychology of the whole enterprise and its cult-like trappings.
Do you feel any sort of animosity towards him? Do you feel like you were a pawn in their little game to get him anointed?
It was an interesting experience. It made a good chapter in a book I've just recently written. So in some ways I'm grateful to him, and it kind of solidified my suspicions about the whole cryptocurrency world. So the only thing I feel animosity to him about is his determination to leverage the UK's incredibly friendly libel system to silence critics.
Mm-hmm. One thing I meant to ask you that's just come out today, actually, there's a lawsuit filing we've seen today, which is regarding the Cooper case, but in it, he refers to the time he spent with you and the other journalists as well. I forget the exact wording, but essentially he says that he never promised that he was Satoshi. Were you left with the impression that he was claiming to be Satoshi, or was there a definite intent to maybe muddy the waters a bit?
Well, isn't that bizarre? Because his whole effort over the last 5-6 years has been to claim he was Satoshi, and he'll sue the hell out of anybody who says he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And certainly, we didn't go along to these sessions on the basis that we're going to meet a man who might or might not be Satoshi Nakamoto or might have had a bit to do with it. We were sold the idea that this was Satoshi Nakamoto. And he can blame other people, which he tends to do, for putting that idea in our heads. But he was the figurehead of this whole operation.
And I don't like it hurting those people I care about. So I'm going to do this once and once only. I'm going to come in front of a camera once, and I will never ever be on a camera ever again for any TV station or any media ever.
So you see, the story there is he agreed to answer one question and I just kept going.
How do you feel watching that back now, all these years later?
All these years later, I feel, what a strange man, what a bizarre way of carrying on. You have invited us, your representatives have invited us to come and hear your story, and now you're telling us you don't want to tell the story anyway, that you've been pressurised into doing this. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Mm-hmm.
Do you wish you could have pushed him harder, or do you think you didn't know enough about what he was doing to push him harder?
I didn't know anything about what he was doing apart from what he told us. And don't forget that at the beginning, he was in such an arrogant, bolshy mood, he said he'd only answer one question. So I managed to get in quite a few.
We'll count that as a victory. Rory, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you about your turn on the Craig Wright crazy train. So thank you so much for your time. And who knows, you might be asked to sail this in court one day.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying your podcast about the crazy train.
Thank you.
My name's Craig Wright, and I'm about to demonstrate a signing of a message with the public key that is associated with the first transaction ever done on Bitcoin.
And who does the world think did that first transaction? What's the name associated with that first transaction?
The monkey is Satoshi Nakamoto.
So you're going to show me that Satoshi Nakamoto is you?
Yes. Some people will believe, some people won't. And to tell you the truth, I don't really care.
But you can say, hand on heart to me, I am Satoshi Nakamoto.
I was the main part of it. Other people helped me.
Why did you feel, though, that you had to come out? And why did you feel you had to keep secret for so long?
I would prefer to be secret now. I don't think I should have to be out there. There's nothing owed to the world where I have to come out and say, I am X, I am Y. I mean, no one needs to do that. It is my right not to say I did something. If I release a paper that actually benefits people, why do I have to actually take credit for it?
Wouldn't you be proud to be known as Satoshi Nakamoto?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I have to bounce around in front of TV cameras.
You could say you've invented something amazing and that you'd want to say, I am the man who invented this.
I want to work. I want to keep doing what I'm doing, and that's what I'm going to do. And I don't work and invent and write papers and code by coming in front of TVs. I don't want money, I don't want fame, I don't want adoration. I just want to be left alone.
Because people assume that Satoshi Nakamoto must be fabulously rich. The inventor of Bitcoin must have vast stores of Bitcoin and therefore be incredibly rich.
What matters isn't how much I have, it's when I use it. Because I've got an asset class that has gone up in value, doesn't mean I pay tax on it now. I pay tax when it's deployed, only on the bits that are deployed, no more.
And are you planning to deploy, as you put it, any of that Bitcoin?
I've deployed enough and I'm happy where I am. I'm not looking for money, and this is one comment I want to make to people. I don't want money, I don't want help. And I'm categorically going to say this, and I'm making sure that things are being put in place with lawyers and whatever else. If anyone puts me up for awards or anything like that, I will never, ever accept a cent. Ever. If you put me for a Nobel Prize, if you put me for an ACM Turing Medal, if you put me up for some honor, I will never accept a cent from any of you for anything.
Why now? Why have you decided to identify yourself as Satoshi Nakamoto?
I didn't decide. I had people decide this matter for me. And they're making life difficult, not for me, but my friends, my family, my staff. I have staff here in London, I have staff overseas, and they want to be private. They don't want all of this to affect them. And I don't want any of them to be impacted by this. None of it's true. There are lots of stories out there that have been made up, and I don't like it hurting those people I care about. So I'm going to do this once, and once only. I'm going to come in front of a camera once, and I will never, ever be on a camera ever again for any TV station or any media, ever.
My sincere thanks to Rory Catherine-Jones for taking us through his signing sessions experience from 2016. Rory's book, Always On, Hope and Fear in the Social Smartphone Era, which contains a section detailing his time with Craig Wright, is available in all the usual formats from all the usual places. I really hope you enjoyed this interview. Hopefully this is the first of many for you, our wonderful Dr. Bitcoin supporters, and thank you so much for that support, which enables us to do stuff like this. It just remains for me to say, as usual, thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon.
You've been listening to Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, written by Mark Hunter, with additional material by Arthur Van Pelt. Editing and production by Mark Hunter. This has been a Contented Media production.